temporary cancellation of the sleeping ban for the winter as an emergency measure, just as Keith Sugar had suggested 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he was responding to this, and that's what this tape is.
Well, let me, how long is this tape?
I think the tape might be a half hour, but the juicy parts that are more interesting for our context here, I think are in the first 5 minutes, and it's cued and ready.
Well, let's begin playing this tape, and maybe if I know you have to leave shortly, but maybe you could make, if you want to interrupt with a few clarifications and comments as to what's going on, we can see how that works. We can't play this tape in the usual clear, high-tech way that we would play normal tapes, since this is a micro tape, but bear with us, we're going to still try to do it anyway.
Mr. Norris's position, and he counts to four in a completely original and different way. And he absolutely has the opposite impact of what he intends to have, but he has no concept of where the votes are in this particular matter. So that's absolutely wrong. But, you know, let's assume that, you know, you could bring it forward and help people to vote one way or another. Now, my sense is that even given the current situation, you would still have to have language that people would find acceptable, that would respond to the issues. So, I don't count the four to what he does, and that's what I have to do as a city council to get four votes.
So, how many...
I wouldn't vote.
How many citizens would you need to come in support of repealing the sleeping ban for it to seem like something that the community wanted? What would it take for you as a council member and a representative to feel like you were going to be doing what the city wanted you to do? Who is it that has been telling you this isn't what you should do, and that's why you're not willing to make a politically unsuccessful choice by making a motion like that?
Politically unsuccessful choice is not a small matter in this community where we just lost a ballot measure that I authored to try to get support for a family shelter. When you're talking about making a politically unsuccessful choice and driving a politics that tends to divide the community along this particular issue and does not allow you to pass a ballot measure where I think we have 80% of the public on our side, that's a big choice to make, just to die gloriously, just so that you can say, I'm a person of conscience and integrity. Doesn't necessarily serve a hot meal to anybody or give anybody a place to sleep. And so it's not a small matter to say, let's make a politically unsuccessful, glorious, you know, idealistic move in this case. So I don't, you know, that's exactly why Mr. Norris and I are at odds on this issue, because he would love to see us batting our heads against the wall. Because the only people that suffer are the people that are actually trying to get shelter services. I would rather house one person than satisfy. And I would tell you, essentially, that most of the...
So, he said, I would rather house one homeless person than satisfy, and then he just trailed off right there.
What do you think he was trailing off from, Chris?
I think he was keeping himself from saying, then satisfy Mr. Norse.
Well, what's interesting is he went on about a great length about a politically unsuccessful choice. That was one of the many questions you put. You had actually a compound four questions that you were asking him about, like how many citizens was it going to take for you to get this issue forward. It wouldn't be a politically unsuccessful in the sense that he had three votes for the safe sleeping zones. The same three people are on the council, and then he had at least two more: Emily Riley and Ed Porter, probably Scott Kennedy. So that's a total of 6 out of 7 votes, or 5 out of 7 votes, or at least 4 out of 7 votes. He claimed he couldn't count the votes. I really.
Well, he also said that he wouldn't vote for it.
Oh, he said he wouldn't vote
he
for it.
He said he wouldn't vote for it.
Is that on this tape, or is that before?
He said it.
Oh, he did. Okay, so he did. I didn't. I guess, yeah, that's interesting.
He said it very softly, though.
I see. So, actually, Scott Graham, who is our sharp-eared studio tape monitor person, has in fact. And so, apparently, Tim said he if he put it on the agenda, he wouldn't vote for it. So, this is the same guy who was going to put on the agenda. Who was going to put on the agenda, on the ballot, a law that would make it legal for homeless people to sleep outside. It would strike the word sleeping from the camping ordinance, although he would have added that you couldn't do it in a vehicle. Craziest thing I ever heard. But at least he would have said, people outside, you're not going to arrest if they don't have a vehicle for sleeping on the ground. And then he turned around, he wouldn't even introduce that. He voted against any discussion or introduction of that last summer. So he really is dodging the issue, it seems to me. He's not admitting his own position has changed. Did he discuss that with you any time further in this conversation?
No, he didn't. He didn't discuss any change in position or anything of that sort. What did he discuss after that?
Is there more on this tape that pertains to the sleeping ban? Or?
Yeah.
Let's play a little more, and maybe you can give your thoughts on that. I noticed he didn't answer your question.
No. I asked him three times.
Really?
Yeah. I think it was either at least twice or three times.
So you asked him again, you know, how many community members does it take for you to believe this is the will of the community? And he said, go put it on the ballot.
Yes. Right.
And now I guess Linda speaks here. Yeah. Do you want to say something?
That's actually the last bit on the sleeping ban itself.
Uh-huh.
She's just wants clarification on what was going on with the ballot measure that he had written,
uh-huh,
and just why it didn't pass. Because she remembers reading in newspapers that it had passed because it had gotten over 50%.
Right, but you need two-thirds.
It needs two-thirds,
right.
Yeah. She was just clarifying that.
And is there anything more on this tape that we should...
There's a conversation much later on rent control,
mm-hmm,
which was really interesting. And really, for me, I learned a lot from this conversation, especially from the last two questions that I asked, because that's what really showed me that someone with integrity who comes into a political position, maybe they have their hands tied somehow. Maybe they get caught in this mess of the powerful, because maybe you... I don't know, it put into question what does it mean to be on the city council? What can you do? What can't you do? If you can't do something just because it's politically unsuccessful or you believe it will be, what does that mean?
Well, again, I think we got to be real careful about the words politically unsuccessful. If politically unsuccessful means you'll be voted out, it means a majority of the community doesn't want it, it means you don't have the votes on the council, those are three possibilities.
Right.
That's one thing. But I don't think either of those three conditions adheres. I guess they would argue that, former council member Rotkin used to say, well, you know, if we passed a sleeping ban repeal, we'd be voted out immediately. We'd be recalled.
Right.
I don't think that is true, and I don't know if Fitzmaurice is claiming that because he doesn't clarify. Certainly he has the votes to pass it. If he chose to favor it, it would pass. I think that I don't think he can dispute. So he does. It's not that it's not politically possible to pass it. Certainly, it's quite politically possible. That's what Sugar said for years, that he didn't have the votes, and that's why he wouldn't put it on the agenda.
Right.
Fitzmaurice, however, does have the votes, yet he's still claiming it's not politically possible. What's the third thing? That his supporters don't want it, that he won't be elected the next time.
Right.
Maybe he needs to find some new supporters. If a majority of the community wants this passed, then I think he needs to deal with it.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, how you doing, Robert?
I'm good.
This is Bud.
Hey, Bud, have you been listening in?
Just for the few moments. I was watching the football game.
Uh-oh, well, you gotta listen to our radio show, Bud.
Well, I got it on one ear.
All right. So you've been listening when talking about the sleeping van, but I know that you came back into town as a...
Friday night.
...a massive street spirit vendor. Where do you sell street spirit?
Well, I'm on my way to my spot now at the corner of... Elms and Pacific Ave, outside the front door of Streetlight Records.
Oh, and you got plenty of street spirits you're ready to sell?
Well, I do need more.
Uh-huh. Well, you know where the Street Spirit Distribution Center is? Oh, over there at Huff Headquarters. again, we're kind of limited on street spirits this month in terms of the number we got, but do what you can with them.
Yeah.
Any impressions of the town since you got back?
Not that I've noticed.
Okay. Anything you want to say about anything you've heard on the radio?
Sure. Why not? I think the city council ought to at least do some kind of trial basis about the sleeping ban, because it doesn't seem like they're going to make it legal for the sleeping ban anyway. Because you got to look at it this way: if they pass the sleeping ban, going to put a whole lot of people in the downtown district and the community area. They're not going to be for that. It's going to put a lot of problems on it.
Well, you see, that's what we've always said, that that's not going to happen because of what you do.
Precisely. It's not going to happen, so they're not going to pass that.
Well, no, what I'm saying is that if you pass the repeal of the sleeping ban, a lot of people would not come downtown per se to sleep. I mean, there's no particular reason to do that. They would sleep where they are, perhaps a little more visibly. That's true in different areas, but I don't think it would result in an influx of people.
I think what they should do, mm-hmm. what city council should look at is just do a temporary trial basis just to see what happens.
That's certainly reasonable.
I mean, that way it can at least be somewhat legal to sleep outside.
Right. Now, you yourself, did you sleep outside last night?
Oh, yeah. I sleep at the same spot, and the people where I camp out, they never had no problems.
Well, then perhaps we don't need to worry about the sleeping ban.
Well, not just saying for me, but others.
I see.
I'm not just speaking for myself, though.
Do you know if others have had problems with that?
Well, one guy that was at the shelter this morning, at the Coral Street shelter, he had a seizure this morning.
Right. Well.
And they had to take him to the hospital.
Right, but how would the sleeping bans being lifted help that?
Good question.
Well, my answer, by the way, to my own question would be that he was lucky to be at the shelter when he had the seizure, because if he'd been hiding in the bushes, he might have gotten no help.
Yeah.
So that
he busted his head wide open because he started bleeding real bad.
Wow. But what I'm saying is, if the sleeping ban were lifted, then people could sleep together in groups in well-lighted areas, and they could use the police more easily when these kinds of problems come up. And so I think that it would be certainly helpful for people to avoid accidental conditions and beatings if the sleeping ban were lifted. That's been my view. What do you think?
That's a good point.
Well, Bud, I thank you for calling in. Anything you want to add?
Yeah, I would like to know if you have any papers you can drop by. I would appreciate it after your program.
Uh-huh. Well, let's see what happens. You know where I am.
Well, I know where you're at now.
Right. Well, you might check me after the show.
Okay.
All right.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So we're still in the studio with Chris Congleton. I'm your host, Robert Norris, here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3. Phone lines are open at 427-3772. Chris is a teacher locally who has been particularly interested in the sleeping ban and has gone to Mayor Fitzmaurice. We've just played a bit of Fitzmaurice's conversation, which was recorded with Tim Fitzmaurice's permission, though I don't think necessarily aired with his permission. But hey, once you allow a tape to be a project, it becomes a project. Tim may have been informed that our show is happening. I requested that, and I'm not sure if that actually happened, but Certainly, Tim always has an opportunity to reply on the air. We will not attempt to get a restraining order against him at this time. Who knows? Maybe that's the mayor calling in now.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
The mayor has been informed, along with council members Emily Riley and Ed Porter.
You have they been informed directly or by answering machine?
By answering machine.
Oh, dear. Okay, well, thank you.
My, that was a quick response. I want to thank producer Becky Johnson for having her ear to the speaker. It's a particularly difficult time because Becky Johnson is also named on this injunction along with myself and Bernard Klitzner. So we have to spend literally dozens of hours preparing for this court injunction Wednesday. And again, I invite people to come to this hearing. It's going to be in Department 7 at 701 Ocean Street, the county building. And there's going to be a press conference before the hearing at 8 o'clock on the steps of the county building where there will be, get this, free pizza. Now, I don't know if you're into free pizza at 8 in the morning, but you won't be hungry if you come to this particular shindig. And again, the council meeting, the city council meets at 3, 5, and 7. 7 is the time when there's this formal oral communications period when you can speak on items not on the agenda, and that, of course, is the sleeping ban, any homeless shelter issue, any decriminalization of homelessness for sitting or for any of the other, you might say, life-sustaining behaviors. You got to sit down or you fall down eventually. And that's illegal, too, downtown, to lie down anywhere downtown. You're not even a matter of sleeping. If you lie down on Pacific Avenue, for example, even off to the side, that's criminal behavior. So the criminals who are running the city council, need to be told by the community that it's time to start striking some of these crazy laws from the books. And that is what we've been doing here today in terms of discussing this issue. Reasonable people who go in and talk to Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice don't seem to get reasonable answers. What do you think? Am I unfairly maligning our mayor here?
No. I was really frustrated with speaking with him in terms of my preconceptions about what our city council is and does and how they function. I no longer feel like they're an adequate outlet for change in this community, even with community support. I mean, it seems like, Tim Fitzmaurice himself suggested a ballot initiative instead of speaking with him. That's really strange to me.
Particularly since he has the majority. We have another caller, I believe. Caller, call back, and we will put you on the line. Here you go.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. Bob here again. I just wanted to ask your guest to paraphrase, if he would, Mayor Fitzmaurice's comments on rent control.
Thank you.
You bet.
So, paraphrase his comments on rent control. Very simply, he said that rent control was something that was important to him. And then he went on to say that it was something that was such a big issue for him to take on that he could not possibly do anything about it until he had a 100% solution that he could suddenly spring out into the world. Because just by being the mayor, he could, if he begins to talk about rent control, suddenly landlords everywhere will start raising their rents in response to this coming rent control crisis that he's been bringing up. And so basically, he can't do anything about it until he can do everything about it, which means, to me,
he's not going
to do anything about it.
Wow. I mean, one can see that this argument has a certain plausibility in a certain way, but the whole idea of operating behind closed doors, and this is what Ed Porter also talked about. Ed Porter's going to be and Arnie Leff, when he was running, he's the chair of the Citizens Police Review Board, also talked about the problems having the Brown Act. I think we may have a response from our questioner here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, I have to call back and comment
sure.
on that. Thank you. I mean, my goodness, what is the definition of leadership? My goodness. If you can't move without having every duck in a row, then what are you about? This is shameful. This is beyond cowardice. This is fraud. This is despicable cowardice. Posturing, hypocritical, despicable. It's an effrontery. I'm shocked. I mean, I knew this existed on some level, but to pass off every issue that is provocative and dynamic by saying that, well, the votes aren't there for 100% solution, or we don't want to upset the status quo, that is beyond sloughing off. Mm-hmm. It has to be commented on and publicly.
Yeah.
I think it's a scandal.
It should be.
It's a leadership scandal in this town, and anyone who considers themselves even moderately to be an activist should know, by the way, that SCAN is an absolute joke and a fraud and has been for years.
By the way, the SCAN steering committee is meeting on Wednesday night at their offices, from which I am banned, by the way.
Well, when Bernice Belton and Nora Hockman step down, maybe SCAN might have some legitimacy in it once again.
And for those who are interested, I would encourage people to go to the SCAN steering committee meeting. When we had our housing committee, before they dissolved our committee, in a closed meeting held in a private home, so that we wouldn't further discuss the sleeping ban and the Dolphin Lee project, our housing committee allowed members of the community to come to our committee meetings.
Let me paraphrase Mayor Tempest Morris.
Sure, hang on just a second, though.
No,
I think
you bet.
The steering committee for SCAN, I want to remind people, is meeting at 5:30. I believe it's at 314 Laurel Street, which is the storefront across from Loudon Nelson Center and Kitty Corner from the new police station. And it starts to meet at 5:30, and they discuss issues. We did successfully get SCAN to say, don't evict all the Dolphin Lee tenants, don't take any action to establish a new project until you have guarantees for the tenants that they won't be dumped out on the street. And Sugar and Fitzmaurice, you know, promised 100 ways from Sunday, but then, of course, they're doing just that anyway. So I encourage people to come to that meeting at 5:30, even if you're not a SCAN member, and ask the SCAN steering committee to take some action on that and the sleeping ban issue, which, of course, is a protracted scandal. SCAN has repeatedly said it favors ending the sleeping ban, but it's people they've elected do exactly the opposite.
I was going to paraphrase Mayor Fitzmaurice in this way. I agree with the issue, but I don't want to come forth and take any position on it because it's going to rock the boat.
Yeah, and it's on tape.
During the Civil Rights Movement. Well, I agree that the blacks shouldn't be pushed to the back of the bus, but I don't want to rock the boat. So unless there's a 100% solution out there and all the ducks are in a row, well, I'm just going to kick back and wait for the bandwagon.
You know, there's never a 100% solution.
Of course not.
You know, and
how brutally, viciously disgusting.
You know, it's not even a matter of you know, getting pissed with Tim Fitzmaurice and saying how stupid he is, but I do think that it's obviously exactly what you say. It's cowardice, it's evasion. But most important, it's futile. It means that there will be no action taken by these politicians until they don't have to take any action other than simply introduce it onto the agenda and slide it through.
It's
so
unbelievably
that being
disgusting.
The case, we have to realize that these people aren't going to do it, and we have to find another avenue to get it done. Maybe that's why he was telling us to go to the ballot, because I'm not going to help you.
That's
not going to help you.
That's
you
the
boys.
Clear message I received.
These are elected officials. They are not leaders.
True enough.
What is leadership? Robert, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
Well, I think at a future show, I'd love to find the rent control section and play that on the air, because I think it's really important for people to know just what's going on. And I think that what he tells your group, you know, him can always change his mind. Maybe tomorrow he'll come up with rent control on the ballot. Maybe he'll reverse himself on the sleeping ban. I mean, it's happened before. With Sugar, he swore 100 ways from Sunday he wouldn't do anything about the sleeping ban until he got everything lined up. And who knows? Maybe then suddenly Catherine Byers came in, gave him a little hope, and then withdrew her help during last May. But I think it's really good to get these statements by public officials, Ed Porter, Emily Riley, Tim Fitzmaurice, out on the air, so we can see just what kind of double talk we're dealing with. And I call it double talk because what he told you is not what he told the electorate in 1998, is not what he told the community in 2000 in the summer when the safe sleeping zones came up. And we have heard no reasonable explanation as to why he's changed his mind. You know, is it John Laird and Marty Wormhout and an inner trust of individuals who said, we are not going to let you raise these issues. If you do, we won't give you our support. He did mention his supporters. Is that right, Chris?
He did mention his supporters.
And what did he say about that? That was said rather softly. Maybe you can tell us what that was.
I believe he simply mentioned that, you know, he had lost a lot of his support from his actions in June, from supporting what was going on. He had lost support, and he communicated that he felt like he would lose a lot more support if he did anything about the sleeping ban.
I'm sure that he's being quite honest there, and that. But I suspect he would get support from other quarters, and I suspect that in carrying through an issue and resolving an issue, he would not only perhaps be getting more support, but he would also be addressing a long... And this is just as a political issue, addressing a long, festering sore that is going to... It's not going to go away. You know, and he can blame me and the activists all he wants. He can concoct restraining orders galore, but people are continuing to die outside. We have the largest death toll last year that we ever had, at least in terms of the numbers of people counted. And his credibility continues to drop when he doesn't deal with the issue, when he doesn't follow up on the Homeless Issues Task Force's $10,000 report, on the findings of the committee to examine the camping ordinance the year before, which found there was no magnet effect. When he doesn't respond to the Community Action Board, the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women's urgent recommendations that the sleeping ban be overturned to protect women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anyway, we have to keep saying this, and this is what we have to say, of course, to the community and not so much to him, because he obviously isn't listening. But if the community listens, then maybe we will have a tent city at City Hall raising the issue. Maybe we will have people coming to City Council meeting on Tuesday, 7 o'clock, which is when you have your oral communications time, or come at 3 and talk about other issues, for example, World Religion Day, which I'm now going to talk about. Chris, I appreciate your coming. I wonder if I can borrow this.
Yes.
I'm going to borrow this tape and make a transcription of it so we can actually have it available on Thursday, Bathrop Spears Broadsides, which is the show you're listening to on Free Radio Santa Cruz here at 96.3 FM.
And on Wednesday morning, I guess I'll be having pizza for breakfast.
Pizza for breakfast, and who knows? Mm-hmm. Maybe jail for lunch. No, I'm sure they wouldn't jail the supporters of this.
In front of the county building.
In front of the county building, 701 Ocean Street. It's Department 7. There's also a man going to trial on a sleeping ban ticket at the same time that we're going into court. So if you get bored with us, you can go check him out. This is a 3-year-old vehicular ticket for his sleeping in his vehicle. He's a vet. He says he's not going to plead guilty. He's not going to pay a fine. He's not going to do community service. He has a right to sleep at night. This is the same argument used by Dennis. Having trouble remembering Dennis's last name. Several years ago, he went to court 13 times. He actually won a stay each time they tried to jail him for not paying the fine. He was able to argue against it. So all that's happening on Wednesday, and I'll be looking forward to seeing you there, Chris.
Yeah, I'll be there to support you.
Hey, thank you. Mm-hmm. And thanks for joining the City Council Coffee Clatch. Maybe you too can be on the injunction. We have an incoming call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
That's Dennis Rehm.
Dennis Rehm, thank you very much. It's like having a research librarian at your fingertips. Dennis Rehm, indeed, is the individual. He unfortunately ran the deadline. His volunteer attorney missed his deadline. That was Peter Leeming, and that's too bad. We've asked Peter to try to take another case, but we haven't heard from him in the last year, and we're hoping we will, because Peter's done some good work. He defended Sandy Loringer, the woman accused of serving free food. Can you imagine that? Who actually spent a month or... 3 weeks in jail in the Santa Cruz County Jail in 1989 for serving food to homeless people. Not unhealthy food, but food. That was because of Marty Wormhout's plan to drive homeless people away from public spaces and to eliminate the free food giveaway. That's our supervisor, Marty Wormhout, the great liberal progressive. So, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Robert Norris, and we are going to return now. I was going to return to the Citizens Police Review Board complaint report, and the problem is there really is quite a number of complaints to go through, and I want people to be able to hear that at a time when they can really get the full story. This is the complaints against the police department for their abusive actions of May 22nd, 1999, which David Lefebvre has left the force. I don't have evidence specifically in a smoking gun that says that he was told to leave, although that's the scuttlebutt, and it seems that the complaints that were sustained, I'll just read these briefly. Sustained complaint, failure to make adequate announcements and warnings. There was a sustained complaint against Officer Lefevre that he used excessive force against the woman with the child. There was a sustained complaint that excessive force was used in the arrest of Steve Argue, and that was against David Lefevre. Although it's interesting, his name is not here. But that was sustained 4-3. And the other sustained complaint was sustained 5-2. So there's a significant minority that isn't going to sustain any complaints, even after a long investigation on the Citizens Police Review Board. There was a complaint that there was inappropriate use of mace, and it's actually not mace, it's pepper spray, as far as I know. Why they're calling mace pepper spray in this, I don't know. They say mace in one paragraph, they say pepper spray in the next. That's your Citizens Police Review Board. And this, again, was 4-3. The board found the pepper spray was used at too close a distance, proper warning was not given prior to its use, that other forms of compliance should have been used when the spray initially failed to gain compliance. This is when they stuck pepper spray down Steve Argue's throat. It's a little mild for what they did, actually. A little mild. And they should have, of course, immediately schedule hearings to research, investigate, and put pressure on the police department to change this policy. And then that is it. So they sustained 3 of the 20, what is it, 4, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. 4 out of 22 complaints, 3 out of 22 complaints were sustained. Have I got that right? 1, 2... 3, 4. 4 out of 22 were sustained. $10,000 later, a year and a half later, confidential report. We don't get to know why, but 4 out of 22 were sustained. So, that's our police review board. That's our police department. That's our city council, which should have investigated this issue long ago or made sure that a real public investigation got held, and they did not. I have a... As I shuffle with my papers here, I hope I have this stuff with me. I think I do. I'm looking for some really great correspondence between Becky Johnson, that's the little voice in the background that gives me all the factual information that you heard calling in several times. And also, she was corresponding with a rabbi in Baltimore, Maryland. I'm going to read the story that the rabbi, actually, I guess, drew the rabbi, her attention to rabbi. The rabbi, his name is Rabbi Chaim Levin in the first place. And then the correspondence that he had with her and with the mayor of Santa Cruz, Tim Fitzmaurice. This is from the Baltimore Jewish Times, December 22nd. A crowd of approximately 100 activists and homeless people assembled in front of City Hall, Baltimore, Maryland, on Monday, December 18th, braving the bone-chilling 23-degree air. Every day, twice a day, for the last 2.5 years, members of the Environmental Crises Center, the nonprofit homeless advocacy group, and other organizations have been meeting in this exact location to distribute meals to the homeless. Monday's larger assembly had gathered to protest an official request from the office of the mayor to move the operation to another location. According to police, use of the alternative site across from the state's prison complex at the corner of Falls Way and East Madison Street should have commenced on December 4th, but the organizations refused to comply and continued to feed needy people at City Hall. The December 18th protest was organized after police handcuffed participants in last week's food distribution. No arrests were made. Rabbi Chaim Levin, a Lubavitcher teacher at the tomb of Samuel the prophet Kollel in Jerusalem, has worked with the ECC, that's the Environmental Crises Center, for the past 3 months. The Chicago native said he feels obligated to advocate on behalf of the homeless. This is a Jewish story, said Rabbi Levin. The Torah tells us that God created the world for the Jews, so therefore everything that is wrong in the world is also a Jew's responsibility. Rabbi Levin joined arms with ECC Director Charles Swindon as the crowd linked hands to form a circle. Mr. Swindon, a self-described born-again Christian, offered a hopeful prayer for understanding and a peaceful resolution to the impasse pass before the food was distributed. Soon after, as the hot chili, hot dogs, cupcakes, and fruit were doled out to the 30 to 40 homeless recipients, Rabbi Levin pointed out an absurd observation that compounded his frustration with the mayor's request. Two blocks south of the contentious City Hall Square is a well-known spot commonly called the Block. The gaudy locale sports brightly lit marquees and pornographic entertainment. So down the street is this X-rated block. I didn't know it was there, and I had to cover my eyes, exclaimed Rabbi Levin. Businesses on the block are protected, but here, feeding the poor, this we need to hide from the public eye. Mr. Swindon contends that feeding the poor in front of City Hall is not only a handy, accessible, and practical place to reach a lot of people with needs, but serves to make a social comment as well. We have the right to assemble and the right to bring our grievances to City Hall, said Mr. Swindon. This problem shouldn't be swept under the rug or shoved under a bridge. The ECC also provides services and resources for homeless and poverty-stricken people and has recently initiated a new program called the Homestead Project, where the group repairs donated houses and places previously homeless people in them. The group feeds between 100 to 150 people daily. In his time here in Baltimore, Rabbi Levin has been counseling at the center and doing a lot of cooking. Working at the center is not political, the rabbi said, but it is the work of that God wants him to do. We are all homeless until Messiah comes, said Rabbi Levin. We are all in exile, trying to get back to the Garden of Eden. Although the group anticipated arrests, Monday's gathering attracted little attention. Police walked quietly around the square, but no attempts were made to stop the food distribution. At press time, Mayor Martin O'Malley announced a commitment to provide shelters and services for the city's homeless around the area, scheduled to open by spring 2001. In the meantime, Rabbi Levin hopes the mayor will allow the organizations to continue their work in peace. What the Torah tells us is that Jews are not allowed to turn anyone away in need. We don't want to fight with the mayor. We will pray for him. This again is from the Baltimore Jewish Times of December 22nd. Rabbi helps fight for the homeless. It talks about Rabbi Chaim Levin in Baltimore, Maryland. Well, my ever-active producer got a wind of this and sent a letter to Rabbi Levin, which read, I just wanted to congratulate you on your successful effort to lobby the Baltimore City Council to provide more funding for homeless people. This is a letter that Becky wrote on December 30th, so apparently between the 22nd and the 30th, Rabbi was able to get some funding. Maybe she can actually let us know more about that if she can, although we're running short on time, and I'm going to hustle with this. I'm a member of HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which has been engaged in a 17-day protest here in Santa Cruz since December 4th regarding our sleeping and blanket bans. These are laws long on the books which criminalize the act of sleeping and of covering up with blankets from 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. each day. Santa Cruz has an estimated homeless population of 1,500 and shelter space in winter only for about 160. 45 homeless people have died in the past year. To effect a change, we've been engaged in a peaceful sit-in in Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice's office to urge him to schedule repeal of the sleeping and blanket bans on the City Council agenda. On December 27th, I and two others were served with a temporary restraining order alleging harassment of a female employee of the city. We believe it is the mayor who orchestrated the suit, which our attorney believes to be a slap suit, a strategic lawsuit against public participation. Since in 17 days none of us received so much as a citation, the lawsuit necessarily fabricated and distorted incidents that had occurred in order to smear us and to muddy the issue we are protesting. Meanwhile, our homeless are cold, tired, harassed by the police around the clock, and dying. Our issue is that making a homeless person a criminal for the necessary acts of sleeping and protecting from hypothermia only further deepens their suffering and reduces their chances of ending their homelessness. Ironically, city officials have told us that the sleeping ban is necessary to keep property values up in a city where the price of housing is pouring more and more people onto the street. I was greatly encouraged by your success and your courage of continuing to feed people at City Hall despite the pressure to stop. If you would, could you send a letter of support for our struggle against the sleeping ban? Address it to Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice and the Santa Cruz City Council. Homelessness is a solvable human problem. I am proud to be in this struggle with people like you. Thank you for your good work, and thank you in advance for supporting our work. Well, Reverend Chaim Levin of Baltimore, Maryland, did respond, and he wrote to the mayor this letter. All religious and spiritual traditions don't amount to much if they can't teach us to open our hearts to the poor. The next time you feel hassled by a homeless person, ask yourself why a society that can spend hundreds of billions on weapons won't provide food and housing to the least amongst us. Our society has the resources to feed and house every homeless person without raising any of your taxes. It's just a matter of our priorities, where we want to allocate our money. The great spiritual and religious traditions of the human race have insisted that a high priority must be given to caring for the poor, but in late 20th century America, the ethos of selfishness and materialism has become the common sense of society. Every day, our economic institutions teach us to look out for number one and to assume that if we care for others, we will somehow hurt our own interests. These values are so deeply ingrained in what is called rationality in our society that people fear they will be seen as utopian nutcases if they take seriously the fundamental spiritual and religious values that are the collective heritage of the human race. Indeed, the greatest irony is to see people who claim to be religious actually advocating that we turn our backs on the plight of others. Some people are philosophically opposed to the government being the instrument of social caring. They argue that this should be left to individual initiative. We would respect this argument more if each person who felt that way came into our city each evening and brought home a homeless person for the night. That kind of individual act of loving kindness still has an important place, but if you don't do that, and you claim to share spiritual or religious values, you have an obligation to be engaged in communal acts of caring, either by actively engaging in homeless support within a religious community or through active political support for the expansion of government housing and food for the homeless today. Institutions are judged rational or efficient to the extent to which they create lots of wealth or power. We want to extend the definition so institutions or social practices are also judged efficient, caring, or productive to the extent to which they help us to become loving people who are ethically, spiritually, and ecologically sensitive. We call this a politics of meaning. This is part of the message of our religious tradition. We urge you to join with us not only in fighting for the homeless, but in the larger struggle to change the bottom line in our society. And as we do that, we need to engage in thousands of little acts of love and caring in our own lives. Working on both fronts at the same time, changing ourselves and changing our society, is the best way to live the values of our religious and spiritual traditions teach us. From strength to strength, and heart to heart, Rabbi Chaim Levin. That's his letter to Tim Fitzmaurice. Now, this is Tim's letter in response. Our mayor wrote back on January 4th to Rabbi Levin, "Thank you for your letter about changing the bottom line on homelessness. I guess you've been contacted by activists in our community to support their protest in our offices. I can tell you that the effort to help the homeless in our town is not being neglected. We just received a $2.5 million grant to help with transitional housing for single people for 10 years. Getting that grant, 10 times more than last year, was an effort of the city's administration. We have just built a new kitchen to feed millions of meals with $500,000 of our city funds. I just got the shelter hours extended every morning for an hour to make the place more humane. I spent most of my time today on the issues of homeless people as a group and as individuals. I am trying to do something real. The protest by three or four people has not even attracted the local homeless community's support, but it is a complex matter. I appreciate your comments nonetheless. It does require hard and practical effort to make a change. Signed, Tim Fitzmaurice." Now, the rabbi sent this letter back to Becky Johnson, who replied and gave her thoughts in response to Tim Fitzmaurice's letter. In response to Fitzmaurice's saying, "Thank you for your letter about changing the bottom line on homelessness. I guess you've been contacted by activists in our community to support their protest in our offices. I can tell you the effort to help the homeless in our town is not being neglected." Becky replies, "For the past 10 years, Santa Cruz has spent about $1.5 million on homeless services. The bulk of that was paid for by grants from the state and the feds. For instance, Page Smith Community House provides transitional housing and counseling for 40 single adults at a cost of over $3 million to build. Yet services fall far short of the need, which has been increasing at an alarming rate. No new shelter has come online in Santa Cruz since July of 98. Mayor Fitzmaurice writes, "We just received a $2.5 million grant to help with transitional housing for single people for 10 years. Getting that grant, 10 times more than last year, was an effort of the city administration." Becky Johnson replies, "It was the county of Santa Cruz that got the grant, not the city, but it is very welcome. From what I understand, and I am still researching this, lobbying at the national level was done for HUD to kick down some serious money for homeless services after years of neglect. No doubt the city put together paperwork suggesting nonprofits to funnel the funding to, but for Mayor Fitzmaurice to claim any credit for this is really a stretch. One of the recipients, Mercy Charities Housing, Inc., HUF has been very critical of because a recent project which uses up 5 years of funding for affordable housing from the Redevelopment Agency will actually destroy more housing than it creates. Tim Fitzmaurice, who is a Catholic, is a huge and uncritical supporter of Mercy Charities Housing, a Catholic organization. We have just built a new kitchen to feed millions of meals with $500,000 of our city funds," writes Tim Fitzmaurice. Becky Johnson replies, "The Homeless Services Center kitchen was a welcome addition and badly needed for the past 8 years. 100 to 200 people a day were fed out of a little trailer. The dining hall for years was a slightly remodeled car garage and very dark and dingy. The food quality has improved slightly in the past year, at least at the 4 p.m. meal. Breakfast at 8 a.m. to 8:30 a.m., when the door is then promptly locked and absolutely no seconds, remains a nutritional nightmare. Perhaps with a new refrigerated storage area, the food quality will now improve. But with the kitchen project, as usual, the project money all went to builders and developers. Most funds were spent on middle-class service providers, offices, and equipment, such as buses, to cart people to and from the shelters. Little trickles down to actual homeless people. Fitzmaurice writes, I just got the shelter hours extended every morning for an hour to make the place more humane. Becky Johnson replies, The armory is not humane. People must sign up at one location between 3 and 3:30 p.m. and wait for up to 3 hours until buses come to take them to the remotely located National Guard Armory to sleep. Previously at 5 a.m., people were, I'm told, rudely awakened, hustled out of the building to wait outside for up to 2 hours waiting for the bus back to the Homeless Services Center. So to spend a single It is true that Tim Fitzmaurice did lobby the state to allow people to sleep in till 6 a.m. This was done twice in the past 4 years by two other mayors. Each time, after extensive lobbying between the National Guard authorities and the Homeless Services Center, they did agree to let people sleep in that 1 hour. Yet each year, the National Guard has moved the time back to 5 a.m. at the beginning of a new contract. This insane little dance done between bureaucrats and National Guard officials illustrates the glacial pace anything positive for the homeless getting done around here. Mayor Fitzmaurice and the rest of the council, for that matter, are really willing to flaunt a cosmetic image of how kind they are for homeless people when they could care less if there is any substance to it. Ask Tim why he doesn't relocate the shelter to a city building where it doesn't require 5 months of negotiating to change the schedule by 1 hour. Ask Tim where people with jobs until 5 p.m., unaccompanied minors, people with dogs, people who are currently using alcohol or drugs, people who have been put out, people who chose to sleep in their vehicles, people who have compromised immune systems, couples who wish to sleep together, and women with children who are terrified CPS will seize their children if they use the shelter. Where will all these sleep at night? On the plus side, the armory is warm and clean, and the mattresses were recently upgraded. The shelter occupancy was also downsized from 200 to 100 as considered full, greatly alleviating crowding. Ask Tim why he thinks he has the moral right to condemn homeless people who are not in the shelter to walk the streets awake each night from 11 to 8:30 a.m. without using a blanket. And without sleeping, I might add. The law is inhumane. Why does he support a law which criminalizes the act of sleeping and of covering up with blankets? And that is Becky Johnson's letter in response to Tim Fitzmaurice's letter to Rabbi Chaim Levin, the man who was not afraid to serve homeless people food in front of City Hall in Baltimore, even at the risk of arrest. And I will commend myself for doing the same. I did that in San Francisco repeatedly with food, not bombs, and we did that in... Well, for it took about 8 years, and then they arrested hundreds of us. They convicted me. I served a month in jail, and as a consequence of this endless protest, and this is one of the positive results of protest, they aren't arresting Food Not Bombs people for serving food anymore. And you can get a meal up there, and you can also get a meal from Food Not Bombs, I guess, on the 2 or 3 days a week that they serve here. Food Not Bombs, by the way, for those who want to volunteer for them or get more information about them, is 425-3345, 425-3345. Whoa. Well, this is still Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I'm still looking for a musical tape to play. Hopefully we'll get one. But our time is almost up. I want to thank everybody who did call in for your calls and to let you know that we all will be coming back on Thursday from 6 to 8 in the evening. I'm going to be spending the rest of my day struggling with declarations, transcriptions of the many hours of tape, the audio tape, that those of us who were at the City Council Coffee Clatch had to make because Mayor Fitzmaurice began harassing That's Mayor Fitzmaurice personally, began harassing members of the protest, demanding they leave the offices, grilling them, speaking to them in a threatening tone of voice. And we have some of this on tape, and we're hoping that Judge Samuel Stevens on Wednesday morning at 8:30 in Department 7 will respond to this transparent attempt to end a political protest by couching it as some sort of a stalking or harassment of staff episode. It's, who knows? It's hard to tell what will happen. But I think we are out of here. The little red hen should be arriving even as I speak. And she is right on time here. No more waiting outside in the cold. So, hey, I'm going to turn this mic over to these fine chickens and see if they can peck a little butt, so to speak. Thanks again for being with me. Again, City Council, in case you're interested, 420-5017 is the number to call in. Tell them end the sleeping ban, end the injunction. Here we have a quick phone call here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Mr. Panda Bear. Aline Smith.
Hey, Aline.
Also known as Quatora Cummings.
Okay.
Great show.
Hey, thank you. Anything you want to say to the community before we leave?
Well, I don't have it in front of me, darn. I wish I'd tuned in earlier.
Okay,
and I'll drop it off to you, and you can give it on your next radio station.
Okay.
The commentaries I had in the newspapers, did you see them?
I haven't seen them yet.
Well, I'll drop the copies over to you.
Sounds good.
All right, over and out.
Bye-bye.
Fat and docile, big and dumb. They look so stupid, they aren't much fun. Cows aren't fun. They eat to grow, grow to die, die to be et at the hamburger fry. Cows well done. Nobody thunk it, nobody knew. No one imagined the great cow guru. Cows are one. He hid in the forest, read books with great zeal. He loved Che Guevara, a revolutionary veal. Cows say tongue. He spoke about justice, but nobody stirred. He felt like an outcast, alone in the herd. Cow doll drums. He moved, we must fight, escape or we'll die. Cows gathered around, cause the stakes were so high. Bad cow pun. But then he was captured, stuffed into a crate, loaded onto a truck where he rode to his fate. Cows are bummed. He was a scrawny calf who looked rather woozy. No one suspected he was packing an Uzi. Cows with guns. They came with a needle to stick in his thigh. He kicked for the groin. He pissed in their eye. Cow well hung. Knocked over a tractor and ran for the door. 6 gallons of gas flowed out on the floor. Run, cows, run. He picked up a bullhorn and jumped up on the hay. We are free-roving bovines. We run free today. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Cows with guns. They crashed the gate in a great stampede, tipped over milk truck, torched all the feed. Cows have fun. 60 police cars were piled in a heap, covered in cow pies, covered up deep. Much cow dung. Black smoke rising, darkening in the day, 12 burning McDonald's, have it your way. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Cows with guns.
president said, enough is enough, these uppity cattle. It's time to get tough. Cow dung flung. The newspapers gloated, folks sighed with relief. Tomorrow at noon, they would all be ground beef. Cows on buns. The cows were surrounded, they waited and prayed. They mooed their last moos, they chewed their last hay. Cows outgunned. The order was given to turn cows to whoppers, enforced by the might of 10,000 coppers. But on the horizon, surrounding the shoppers, came the deafening roar of chickens in choppers.
We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo.